Did you know Jed Clampett knows magic fish talk? Well, maybe Jed doesn't, but Buddy Ebsen, who played Jed Clampett, does. Magic fish talk was one of the many wonders he showed Opie when he appeared on the Andy Griffith Show as Opie's hobo friend, Dave Brown. In addition to magic fish talk and his flashy fishing lure, the Golly Whopper, he makes with shiny spinners and ribbons, Mr. Dave showed Opie how to get a gumball out of a gumball machine without a penny. There were two machines. One gave gumballs and one gave prizes. Opie couldn't decide, but he didn't have to. With a pat on the head, a few magic words, and a wire, Mr. Dave provided Opie with all the gumballs he could want. That gumball machine didn't want Opie's money anyway. It was just as happy with a pat on the head as any child would. Opie became enamored with Mr. Dave's ways. When Aunt Bee asked Opie to clean his room, he responded, "I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow is the perfect time to start any job." Think about it. Tomorrow is the perfect time to start any job. It's always tomorrow, folks. Oh, come on, help me out. That was funny. That's wisdom he learned from Mr. Dave. When Barney caught Opie playing hooky to go fishing with Mr. Dave, Andy knew he had to act. He went down to Mr. Dave's shack by the railroad tracks to have a talk. "Well, Sheriff, it's an honor. Where is Opie?" "He's in school." After some small talk about a stolen chicken and a missing apple pie, Andy says he's not there about the pie or the chicken. He's there about Opie, who's come to believe hoboing seems a lot more fun than sheriffing. Something wrong? There seems to be something wrong with his thinking. Got a little twisted on things lately. Like being able to tell the difference between right and wrong. Not that that's an easy thing. A lot of grown-ups still struggling with that same problem. But it's especially difficult for a youngster, because things rub off on them so easy. "I see. Are you suggesting I'm not fit company for Opie?" "That would seem to be the case." "Well, Sheriff, maybe I do look at things a little differently than other people. Is that wrong? I live by my wits. I'm not above bending the law now and then to keep clothes on my back or put food in my stomach. I live the kind of life that other people would just love to live if they only had the courage. Who's to say that the boy would be happier your way or mine? Why not let him decide?" Andy responds to the tempter with wisdom that should be written on every parent's heart. Wisdom not only for life, but for faith. "Nah, I'm afraid it doesn't work that way. You can't let a young'un decide for himself. He'll grab at the first flashy thing with shiny ribbons on it. Then when he finds out there's a hook in it, it's too late. Wrong ideas come packaged with so much glitter, it's hard to convince them other things might be better in the long run. All a parent can do is say, wait, trust me, and try to keep temptation away." I'm not sure when it happened. Probably before 1961, or this episode wouldn't have made much sense. But somewhere along the way, our parenting took a wrong turn. Rather than teaching our children right from wrong, we taught them situational ethics. Rather than teaching them faith and helping them learn to love worship, we said, let them decide. What child, if they have not been taught right from wrong, is going to make right choices? What child, if they haven't been taught the love of worship, is going to choose church over hockey or soccer or skiing? Very few. And as Andy said, a lot of grown-ups still struggling with the same problem. Friends, there are a lot of gollywhoppers in our world. A lot of flashy things with shiny ribbons. They come packaged with so much glitter, it's hard to know right from wrong. It's hard to choose something that doesn't look quite as flashy, but is better for us in the long run. But those are the very choices that bring us life. Those are the very choices that bring us closer to God. Now, God seems to look at temptation a little differently than Andy. But I think God would approve of his thoughts on the importance of making right choices. Matthew tells us immediately upon Jesus' baptism, immediately after God said, "This is my son, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased," Jesus was driven into the wilderness by the Spirit to be tempted by the devil. Matthew's first readers would have understood immediately. "This is my beloved son" comes from Psalm 2 and was used liturgically at the public coronation of a Davidic king. God is not only claiming Jesus as God's beloved son, God is proclaiming Jesus to be the next king in the line of David, God's Messiah. Like every king, Jesus must have his mettle tested. If Jesus is the Son of God, he will withstand temptation, even from the devil. He will make right choices. This is why the Spirit led him to the wilderness, to face the devil. Jesus' journey from the waters of baptism through his death on the cross to being raised from the dead, Jesus' journey to life leads him face to face with evil. If he is the Son of God, if he is to prevail, Jesus must withstand this confrontation and choose wisely. Friends, it's this simple. We complicate the story. What's the source of evil here? Is there really a devil? Was God behind all this? Matthew doesn't ask those questions. And I'm not sure it helps for us to either. Like flashy ribbons and shiny spinners, they distract us from the truth. The devil has come to drive a wedge between Jesus and God. The devil has come to distract Jesus from his calling by putting his desires before God's will. The devil does this by placing temptations in front of Jesus that on the surface sound pretty good. What could be wrong with feeding the hungry, with stones turned to bread? What could be wrong with displays of divine power? Isn't that what keeps us coming back? We see the hand of God at work. What could be wrong with worship, even worship of the devil, if it means we have all the wealth and power of the world? Think of all the good you could do. Doesn't the end justify the means? None of these things are inherently evil. No question, taking the devil at his word, Jesus could do great things, but he would not be doing God's will. Jesus would be going it alone, apart from God. He would have placed his own desires over his calling. He would not be living as the Son of God. He would not be serving as God's Messiah. He might be doing good, even great things, but he would be serving Satan. Friends, it's no coincidence the story of Adam and Eve is the other reading this morning. The stories go hand in hand, because the temptations are the same. Serve ourselves or serve God. Life and death choices that will lead us to life, that will lead us to become one with God or not. No one can serve two masters. On Friday, I received a letter from Presbytery stating the cultural changes decimating the church's ministry are no one's fault. Perhaps not. But they are the consequences of the choices we have been making as people of faith for generations. The same day, I received wonderful news. Not everyone sees these cultural changes as inevitable. Some of our families are willing to make different choices. On Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, some of our young women who are on the girls' volleyball team and their families chose to be here for our Ash Wednesday service instead of going to volleyball. Knowing some of the families, I know they made the choice freely. They didn't do it because a pastor or the church said they had to be here. They did it because they believe on Ash Wednesday it is more important to worship than play volleyball. Now, I'm not throwing shade on sports, extracurricular activities, or other choices people make. Elizabeth and Will were active in sports, theater, music, Scholastic Bowl, speech, you name it. There wasn't a night of the week that we were home for 4 years, 6 years. Well, 8 years, never mind. Some of the fondest memories I will ever have come from sharing those moments with our children. But as wonderful as those moments are, we knew as parents, and more of our families are coming to realize, we knew, as tempting as it might be, we couldn't let those moments drive a wedge between us and God. We knew choosing worship over anything else would bring our family closer to God and closer to each other. No question, it takes discipline and sacrifice to be faithful Christians. There are a lot of gollywhoppers out there, a lot of other choices that seem a lot more attractive. And frankly, it hasn't helped that so many of us were told what to do. You have to go to church. You have to read the Bible. You have to pray. You have to tithe. You have to serve others. So many of us were told what to do. But we were never told why or how those things would bring us closer to God. Friends, this life isn't for everyone. If you go to church, read the Bible, pray, tithe, serve others because someone told you you have to, you will never know the joy of faith. Worship will leave you empty. The Bible will bore you. Your prayers will sound rote. Tithing and serving will be a burden. Your spirit will be as dry as the desert. But if you desire to be closer to God, if you truly want to love God with all that you are, all of those things can help. Not to mention, there are a lot of folks in this room, not just pastors, who can help you find your way to the joy of faith. Beloved, we make countless choices in life. Each choice will bring us closer to God or drive us away. In this season of Lent, may we find the desire, the wisdom, and the strength to choose Christ and to draw closer to God, that we might know the joy which comes from making this life-giving choice. Thanks be to God.